This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. And our guest is Diana Johnston. She has written a, in my opinion, a brilliant article titled Yellow Vests Rise Against Neoliberal King Macron. And Diana, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
This is, you wrote this piece, and it, I saw it in Consortium News, and it was November 17 when this all began. Here it is December 17, and it this phenomena in France seems very much alive. Let's start with why did they choose yellow vest, and what is this about?
Well, I think it's a symbol of the common driver or the common person, ordinary person, because everybody has, is supposed to have one if you have a car. It's a safety thing that everybody's supposed to have in their car, so it's readily available. It's very visible, you see. I mean, that's what it's for. It's meant to attract attention in case of a road accident. And so it just sort of, somebody got the idea. I don't know who, but it really caught on because it's really an extremely appropriate idea.
They didn't run it past a committee first. That's probably why. Well, now, you call him King Macron, and he has, we were told, certainly in the Globe and Mail, Toronto Star, New York Times, they saw that, the French president as pretty much their favorite guy. He's very smart. He knew what was best, and he got a big electoral victory. How did he run into trouble so fast?
Well, first of all, by the way, I didn't call him the king. That was the headline that the editors put on.
Oh, don't we all love people who write headlines?
Well, the thing is that he was a totally artificial candidate. He had no political background whatsoever. That was used in his favor, you see, because in fact this shows that it shows that people are pretty sick of politicians, and so the idea was that using Macron could profit from that people being sick of politicians, because he was a young man who came from nowhere. Oh, it wasn't nowhere. He came from the financial sector, from the elite. He had been sort of discovered by very powerful financial people, mm-hmm. and had been given a job in the Rothschild Bank, which is a way of sort of initiation. You take in somebody who you want to be one of your own, and you put him in the bank for a while and let him have a big deal where he gets $1 million, and then he's one of you. So he was initiated into the financial elite because he was very affable. He was ready for compromise. They felt he could use him perfectly. And but you see, he was never really that popular. Remember that in the first round of the French presidential elections, which is in two rounds because you have the runoff between the two who are ahead, mm-hmm. there were four leading candidates, and each of them had about a fourth of the vote. So his share of the vote initially was about a quarter of the vote, mm-hmm. and actually, he differed in many ways from the other three candidates who would have, notably in foreign policy. The other three, for instance, were all in favor of improving relations with Russia. Mm-hmm. But Macron was really the establishment in the most significant use of the term. I mean, the financial establishment candidate. But it was a very arranged, with scandals and everything, sort of election campaign, so that he ended up in the runoff with Marine Le Pen, who is commonly stigmatized as far right or even fascist, and that was enough to have a scare campaign that people voted for Macron in order not to vote for Marine Le Pen. So actually, this popularity, he won, or rather, Marine Le Pen lost heavily. It's not what happened. And that made it look as if Macron had a huge majority.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, it was not a majority that had to do with any policies. It had to do with the fact that he was different.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he was going to make everything wonderful, as candidates tend to say.
Mm-hmm.
But then when things start happening, everything goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was an extremely fragile popularity that he had, which has just blown up very rapidly.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, in his first months, or let's say if we were talking last summer, the media here described him very flatteringly as the man who's going to kind of bring the medicine to the French people. They were going to have to wake up to a modern new way, and they needed this bright young man, and he was not afraid of labor. He was not afraid of anybody. He was going to set a course, and now we have a train wreck.
When you say he's not afraid of labor, that means he's against it.
Yeah, putting it mild. Yeah. And so what was the straw that broke the back? It was the gas prices, and then from that flowed other matters, eh?
Yeah, it's much broader than that. But it started with that, because the announcement that gasoline prices, and especially diesel prices, are going to be raised by nearly 7% in the next beginning of the year, that was really the straw, because, you see, this revolt really comes from the countryside, not from the cities. It's moved into the cities, but it's really the countryside against the cities.
Mm-hmm.
And people in the countryside have to use their cars. They have to get to work. They have to get to the market. They have to get to the hospital. They have to get to everything. And so they're the people that use the cars and have to use the cars, and they're also the people having the biggest economic difficulties. And the ironic thing is that for years the French government has used incentives to get people to buy diesel fuel cars on the grounds that it's environmentally better. And now the government is going around and say, no, no, diesel is worse. So they're going to put huge taxes on it. And people who have diesel-running cars can't afford to go and get another one, much less an electric car, which everybody says is so wonderful. And so they feel really betrayed in a whole lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ed, I mean, I really like that point in the article we're told how bright he and his cohorts are, but to start a complicated debate about what kind of car, and they don't get it right. As my reading your article, they seem to have sold the idea, oh, you need diesel, and then they change course.
Oh, well, no, excuse me. There's a misunderstanding. I didn't say this government. I mean, it's previous governments for years that have...
But he was in the cabinet of that government, wasn't he?
No, no, I mean the previous government. It's been going on for years that they promoted diesel. So long that just most people have diesel cars.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the trucks.
but it also leaves people scratching their heads about their leaders, right? I mean, and you point out, well, okay, if you want to go electric, so how are you going to be able to buy the car, and then where is that energy going to come from? Did I get that right?
Well, exactly. The fact is, that the country really isn't prepared to provide for a huge number of electric cars. I mean, there aren't many places you can get. It's absolutely impractical at this point. And the thing to stress, because this was presented as an eco tax, which is a complete fraud, as I pointed out in my article, because the idea of an eco tax is that, oh, you put a big price on on CO2 producing fuels in order to use that money to develop sustainable energy. But that's not what the money was earmarked for. The earmark was simply to help fill in the budget deficit. So it was not an ecological tax. It was not going to do anything for the environment. Mm-hmm. And so people feel that it's very easy these days for anybody to say, oh, you've got to tighten your belt, you've got to do this and that because of the environment. But, you know, if you really wanted to stop CO2, you could ground all those fire aircraft they're flying around. Mm-hmm. That would be a good way to do it.
Mm-hmm. And the people are probably saying that in the streets, I assume.
Yeah, you see, people aren't so dumb. And and they're really saying all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. The very few journalists who actually go out into the mist and breathe in the tear gas in order to interview people. There are about two, there's some very small website person named Vincent Lapierre who does this, and also RT has done this. But the big chains tend to keep their difference, although they have interviews, you know, that aren't that bad. But it's clear that there's a lot of anger and a lot of thinking that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm. It, by the way, it seems to be a part of French history. It's once again at quite explicitly issues about rich and poor.
Well, yes. I think somebody just sent me an article. I can't remember. It was from the, maybe it was from the New York. I mean, it was something like from a mainstream source about how the French billionaires have been getting, the French rich have been getting richer in recent years, even than other rich. So the gap has really been widening here very much, and that doesn't necessarily show, but these austerity measures, you see, are hitting ordinary people, of course, working people. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, that's not all. The working people aren't anymore the factory workers because the factories close a lot. But there are all kinds of workers, you know, in services and so on, who and farmers and that are working very, very hard, and without even the security that factory workers used to have. So. There's a whole lot of discontent, and at the same time, the rich are doing very, very, very well. And Macron, his tax measures have favored them with that same old argument. Give the rich a lot of money, and then they'll invest it, and that will create jobs.
It's really just the old trickle-down story.
Exactly.
It's Reaganism for the French. We're speaking of
the French don't care. No, you see, that's true. I mean, somebody, they've said that, oh, the French don't like rich people. Well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, for instance, Gérard Depardieu, the actor, is rich. They don't resent him because, you know, I mean, at least he's doing something. You know, he's acting and he's entertaining them. But these people like Bérancourt, who was the heiress to the Oriol hair dye cosmetics company, is one of the richest women in the world. That's the kind of wealth that people don't really appreciate.
Well, also, I mean, they want it to be. I've read your previous articles about this. In many ways, your writings it pointed toward this crisis that's come now. You were pointing out that the French have a sense of community slash patriotism, and the services people get it's a national phenomenon, and that's their identity. So when you privatize that, take it apart, you're really attacking the country. Am I getting that right?
Yes, Yes, I think you are. You see, there are various ways of distribution, and there's a way of distribution which I am most suspicious or even hostile. The idea of, oh, well, let's cut down the services and give everybody a free handout. This is very bad because it will completely destroy solidarity. The public services are a method of redistribution of wealth which favors everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody is favored by good public services, you see. Mm-hmm. And that is a way of equalizing things. I mean, everybody has water and communications and so on. And, of course, the trouble is that the whole trend of this, what they call neoliberalism, it's just financial capital taking over, is to privatize these services. Well, I give you a very good example, which is the auto routes. Now, especially, you know, the auto routes are paying. And they were built with government backing and so on. So it's a public service, the mm-hmm. auto routes.
Uh-huh.
And it's correct for them to charge because they have to keep up the roads and so on. But these have been sold to private interests who then raise the rates. And so what could be an income for the community, for the state, for the government, for the people, becomes a private profit that goes into the financial sector. Mm-hmm. And it can be foreigners that buy it up, you see. Mm-hmm. So in fact, then the people are simply being exploited mm-hmm. by financiers instead of using a common public service.
Mm-hmm. You can see why liberty, equality, fraternity is still a pretty good slogan. We're speaking to Diana Johnston, and Diana, I've been impressed with the what people say, and they would certainly say it here, that the interviewed in the streets, they say, we don't understand our political parties. They talk jargon to us. Is that what is wrong with, say, the parties who seem to be kind of nonplussed by this situation?
Well, I think here the people understand them. They just don't believe them.
There was a follow-up there, too, in what your earlier point. Are they thinking of, I see the word Frexit on signs. Do they associate this privatization business as coming from other quarters outside the country?
Well, they should, but I don't know how that idea is catching on. Last weekend, there was quite an interesting grouping of Gilles Jouneuve of in the Place de l'Opéra. It was absolutely full,
mm-hmm.
And they had a press conference, and that was interesting because the idea is there's no spokespeople. Anybody can be a spokesperson, but it circulates, you know. There's no mm-hmm. official spokesperson. But they did have some people who got up and made a whole list of demands, and one of those people, I think the main one, was, by the way, I should mention this, was a black woman, because, of course, the first accusations come, oh, these must be fascists. Well, they're not. Mm-hmm. And there you saw Frexit signs.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that there are militants for leaving the European Union in France, and they're probably coming into this, mm-hmm. as I think they should, to try mm-hmm. to educate people about the role of the European Union. And mm-hmm. this is a great opportunity to do it. Mm-hmm. But the main political demand at that meeting, and which is becoming the main political demand, is citizen-initiated referendum.
Mm-hmm.
That is focusing as the main thing. It expresses the total distrust and rejection of the political system. We want to decide, and we want to be able to ask the questions and give the answers.
Yeah. It's very interesting that the new president of Mexico, that's his strong suit. He says he will put things to plebiscite when it's a major policy. He's gonna go work from in a process with the people. And I notice that Washington doesn't like that idea. What about question of the leadership per se of Mr. Macron? Is this in question? The persistence of the demonstrations, is that kind of the bottom line, or where does that play in?
Well, you know, what has happened is that he is just totally discredited. And you have to realize that there's been other things that he's done that have helped to discredit him, that are just tactless, aside from his economic policies. He's been very arrogant. There was a scandal about his bodyguard who went and beat up people in a demonstration and turned out to have great privileges outside of the system and so on. So just one thing after another, he is pretty discredited. But, of course, he's been elected for a 5-year term, and he has a majority in Parliament. So there's really no way to get rid of him very easily or at all. But I think that this is the beginning of something. Mm-hmm. It may die down over the holidays, especially because it's getting very cold and wet.
Mm-hmm.
But something has happened, which is it's a prise de conscience. It's suddenly when people start talking to each other, you see, in the streets, mm-hmm. and then they realize I'm not the only one who's discontented. We're all discontented,
mm-hmm.
and we're all sick of this. And then they start explaining why they are, and this is very contagious. This is really catching on. So there's a huge awakening. And you see, I would mention this. Back in 2005, President Chirac actually called a referendum on the joining the European Union Constitution. Now, he did that because he thought he'd win, mm-hmm. and he thought it would be good to have the people vote for it, and they didn't. They rejected it by a solid majority of... And then, 2 years later, the Parliament went and adopted roughly exactly the same thing with a different name.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of depoliticized people in the sense. I thought, my God, we went... Because that was a huge movement. People were discussing that constitution all over. I went to several meetings, and people were reading the damn thing. It's not very readable. And we're seeing what's wrong and seeing the catch and so on. And this was a huge, very self-educating movement, and it was rejected. And this kind of made people totally discouraged. They went to all that trouble to reject it, and look, the government goes right ahead. But now I think that people are coming out of that slumber, so to speak, and and that's why the referendum is very interesting, because of course that recalls the European referendum, which the people rejected.
By the way, they don't like to be reminded of that because they're treating it just like, well, of course we did that, but that wasn't an of course moment. They actually lost. We're speaking to Diana Johnson. The article is in Consortium News, and it turns out very prophetic as to what's unfolding. Diana, you make a very strong point about those who regard themselves as leaders of the masses, you might say, left parties and progressives, who seem shocked. And the point I take from you is that they're expressing a kind of fear, which is foolish, that actually you should not fear the people.
Well, I don't know that there's so much fear here. I think there's, except on the part of Macron and his supporters, I think there's quite a bit of fear. I think that the rest of the political class is sort of stunned, and is looking for a way that this could, how is this going to profit me,
mm-hmm.
and trying to relate to this in some sort of way. But they have to be discreet, because the movement has made it so clear that it doesn't want to be taken over by leaders. So,
by the way, I have to ask you, do you see an echo a little bit of what happened in New York? Remember on Wall Street, where that definitely was the moment where they started to occupy Wall Street, and they definitely did not like the idea of prominent politicians coming and giving them lectures.
Yeah, that's true, but I think the system is so different here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the country is so different. The United States is so huge.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems to me a problem of different dimensions.
Mm-hmm. let's name Mr. Melenchon seems to be one of the people who has some traction with the people. I mean, how do you think he has been handling himself? What do you make of his position?
I think he's handling it okay. The thing is that he was attacked by the government just weeks before all this happened, in a very sinister way. Mm-hmm. The government suddenly showed up at the dawn, which is when you can come in and force your way in. The police came in to his home, to his party, and
Melenchon's home,
documents saying that he was accused of something or other about the wrong, his parliamentary assistants weren't really assisting him or something really not that important, you know. I mean, as the sort of thing that every politician does. And, I mean, this is the sort of thing they use selectively against the conservative candidate in that last election in order to pave the way for Macron against Fillon. This sort of little peccadillo type of offense that really, if you look carefully, you can find everybody practically has done something like that. But they went in and he got very, very angry. Mm-hmm. And his anger pleased some people and horrified others.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he had reason to be angry, because they didn't come in and say, we want such and such a document. They came in and took everything. So it's a fishing expedition. So they just can look for anything in his papers and use it against him.
They can't seem to resist being heavy-handed. That's criminalizing a political opponent, right?
Yeah, and they've done that with Marine Le Pen, too. But this was even, they've done that. They did that. In fact, the three presidential opponents of Macron have had this done to them, all three.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't say it's a plot, but maybe there's a sympathy somewhere.
We should ask you a closing. You say that to some extent it's weakening, or it's less, you think it might have like a winter interruption. Do you think that they will? These questions are going to be returned to as?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think they're giving up. But you see, this is it's a strange movement. I mean, it's completely different from other movements that I've seen, because you know there was a big movement of the railroad workers against the government measures. But it was only the railroad workers, and at some point the unions say, okay, that's enough, and that's it. But you see, you can't say that's enough of this. There's no boss to say that that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are going to keep meeting among themselves, I think this is a very significant meeting. I think it movement. I think it can take different forms. It's taking like now popular assemblies. You know, people getting together and deciding what they want, and listing these demands, which the list gets longer, and demanding referendum. I don't think that if there's a gap in it, that means. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can have a gap in order to catch your breath and then come back stronger.
Yes. By the way, and in closing, the French have a real sense of their own history. I notice people post dates occasionally, and they just put up 1848, and everybody understands, or 1789. This is a population, when they do get together, they have a memory.
Well, they do. Of course, the education system has been trying to get rid of that, but they haven't succeeded yet.
Wow, that's good news.
No, it's true. It's true. They absolutely have.
They tried to rewrite some history.
My daughter is a history teacher, and she's having to fight against this tendency.
Well, maybe we'll also get our history back if the people stay in the streets.
But she's teaching history, but she realizes how much it's under attack, you know, mm-hmm. because they want to have people just living in the present and consuming and working and, you know.
Buying.
But it still is there.
Please go shopping, says the leader.
Exactly.
Diana Johnson, we always look forward to your writing. We thank you very, very much for the time.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.